Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237. With us, a very special guest, first-time guest, Senator Joseph Addabbo, Jr. He is a lifelong resident of Queens. He is a New York State Senator representing the 15th Senatorial District, elected to that office in 2008 and serving 7 years in the New York City. He served 7 years in the New York City Council. Senator Joseph Addabbo Jr. continues to proudly carry on the public service tradition of his father, the late great U.S. Congressman Joseph P. Addabbo Sr., who served 13 terms in the United States House of Representatives. So I just want to say, I wanted to mention your father because your father still has four health clinics in Queens that bear his name. And when I go by and I see that I did not know, and I look up and I say, I know the son. So that is interesting. That public service is something that's rare, that you take the second generation, but you could see your father's legacy still there, those four clinics in Queens.
Thank you, Greg, and I appreciate it. A pleasure always to see you and your viewers. Thank you so much. But yeah, you know, I remember my dad talking about this opportunity of bringing healthcare to anyone, regardless of their background, regardless of their economic situation, that they can go to somewhere and get some medical assistance. And then just as he got the idea and the funding on the federal level, he passed in 1986. And in his honor, they opened up the first one in Rockaway. And like you said, now there's multiple sites, and the dedicated workers that are there truly is appreciated by the family and my constituents and people who go there. But again, his legacy, I guess, of trying to help others, you know, lives on, and we're truly appreciative of it.
Yeah, and with healthcare being the topic, he was on the forefront of healthcare because that was in the mid 80s. So before people were talking and before it was a buzzword, he got it done.
Yeah, it was like the precursor to the urgent cares that are around now, you know, taking some pressure off of our hospitals. But just to watch him do his public service, you know, the love of just helping others truly inspired me, certainly. To try and be an elected official first, the city council, and just trying to do the best thing I can, best work I can. So I had a great teacher and a great father.
Now, also, we met when you were a councilman, and you were the chair of the civil service committee, right? Mm-hmm. Am I saying it correct? The committee, civil service committee,
a pension, I believe. But yeah,
okay. So. You had a hearing for our school safety agents who at the time were not civil service. And I have the publication that we.
Oh, my gosh.
And there is from. Yeah. You can see the audience.
Yeah, I see.
That is you. That is
my
I.
My hair is a little blacker than
that was back in 2006. You had that beautiful hearing. And yeah. The result. Let me tell you the result of that hearing.
Yeah.
The result of that hearing, at the time, it just seemed insignificant. The result of that hearing allowed us to negotiate to have school safety paid the same amount as the other peace officers we represent because they weren't civil service. That was the last piece. And that, at the time, made a $7,000 difference. The next contract, it would have been a $9,000 difference. This contract, it would have been $11,000 difference. So school safety would have been making $11,000 less than the other peace officers we represent if you had not done that. And I want to continue to thank you. And I want everybody to know what Senator Joseph Addabbo Jr. did for us when he was a councilman. So yeah, that, and I'm saying, wow.
Listen, it's partnership. It's not just me. Again, I always had a great legislative team working with me, but it's people like yourself who advocated for those members, those dedicated workers, just trying to do the right thing. It's about fairness. It's about equity, parity. And that's why I've always seen many of these labor issues. So it was a pleasure working with you on that. And in the end, the right thing happened, you know, for those workers. And again, just so that they can provide for themselves and their families. dedication and commitment doesn't pay the bills sometimes, right. You know?
Right.
And so we have to help it out, you know, and right. I was just thankful to have the opportunity to help.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about the budget in terms of some of its best features and those items left out or in need of improvement, such as minimum wage, which the Senate increased.
Yeah, you know, minimum wage, obviously, for our workers, certainly of great importance, and it is in the budget. It'll increase over the course of, I think, 3 years, downstate, I believe, up to $17. And, you know, this is a rational incremental increase. Always mindful of the workers and, again, the work that they do. Mindful also of the businesses that are impacted. And we'll keep a watch. You know, I've been supportive of minimum wage increases in the past. We have seen it doesn't hurt the business industry. It gets absorbed rather quickly. And in the end, the workers benefit. A more productive, happier, productive worker, again, providing for themselves and their family. So I was glad it was in the budget. And there's always more work to do. You know, when you look at this budget, every year, a budget has the opportunity of doing many things, so healthcare, education, and so forth. But again, it has the opportunity of helping our workforce throughout the state. And I think we did so well here, roughly $900 million to the Department of Labor, over $10 million for programs, good programs, apprenticeship programs, workforce programs, programs that have a track record of actually producing a good worker and that they actually do work in credible programs. So it's a good investment that the state does make. Of course, we could always use, you know, more money, and we will going forward, you know, being fiscally responsible. But I think we have a great opportunity each budget to make sure that our workforce throughout the state is protected, the workforce, the workplace environment is made safer, and that their interests and concerns are addressed. And I think we did it in this budget as well.
You recently sponsored a bill that creates a temporary commission to conduct comprehensive studies on how paid family leave is currently being used and to make recommendations on how to increase access and visibility to the program. Why do you think such legislation is needed?
Again, I think it's giving the workers what they deserve. Obviously, that security that should they have to leave the workplace environment because of a family member, an emergency, the military, that they return to a secure job. And I think that's what the workers deserve. I love the work that we did during the initial paid family leave bill passage, you know, talking to the workers, the businesses, and working with the administration at that time. An administration who didn't want to do it, again, if you remember, the Cuomo administration at one point said we have no appetite for paid family leave. And almost to a year to the day later, he's actually signing a bill. We gave him that appetite. We showed the workers showed the governor at that time, we need paid family leave. We've had extremely expanded it since then to include siblings. And so now we look at it. Now we don't step back and say, hey, our job is done. You know, we don't have to do anything with paid family leave. We're done. No, now we monitor and make sure that it's the best product that the state workers deserve. So now we created a task force. We'll have data. And now we're going to look to see if there's any improvements that are needed or if something is not being implemented correctly. So our work is never done, certainly with the workers and in this case with paid family leave.
Well, that's interesting because a lot of times, and I'm going to say we do things and then we step back and say, okay, the work is done. You said that work is not done. You're going to monitor it. You got data, everything else. I think New Yorkers will all be delighted to hear that there's going to be a study to make sure that whatever programs we put forward are working and that somebody's watching it and saying, you know what, we can make improvements here. That's good. Who thought about the follow up? Whose idea was that?
You know, many times I would like to say the elected official, but many times it's not. You know, it's the workers. It's the agencies. It's, you know, I love the input that we get from our constituency because, you know, all it needs is an idea on something that we could bring back to Albany and create a piece of legislation that addresses an issue of concern. So in this case, it might have been an elected official, but I'm going to guarantee, you know, I'm going to suggest also that it was either some agency or some worker or some workplace environment that says, hey, we should check up on this, you know, over the course of a number of years. We should check. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly fine to create a task force to do such.
You are a member of the Senate Civil Service and Pension Committee. Access to public employment and pensions are two big items many people are concerned about.
You know, obviously, I love that committee because we basically do, we leave the politics out of it. And we basically get to, again, what are the issues and concerns of our residents, our workers, civil service exams, civil service positions, pensions. And in this budget, we did a host of pension improvements, a wide variety of which that basically might have failed in the committee, but we got an opportunity to advance them in the budget. And in the end, you know, people depend on their pension. They worked hard for it. They contributed to it. And we have to protect it and in some cases improve it. And I think at times it needs to be a partnership because a lot of times what we want to do in the state affects the city worker. And we're going to need the city council, the mayor to cooperate with us when we want to improve the benefits of a city worker, albeit any city worker. And those who put their job or their life on the line when they go to work every day, we need to acknowledge that these individuals need to be protected as pensions. But remember, when you increase or protect or improve the pensions, it's about recruitment, keeping good workers try to find good workers and retention, keeping those good workers. So whenever we do these pension bills, I always see it as a recruitment and retention aspect to it as well, which I think is so sorely needed in the city workforce at this time.
39 years ago, I started working for the city with the idea of having the benefits and the pension. And I couldn't see at the time the pension system. I came in, I was 21. I couldn't retire till I was age 62. That was 41 years. I said, that's a long time. I don't think I'm going to be around here for 41 years. 39 years later, I'm still here. But we've had pension improvements. We had age 55 pension come into effect. And then we had a 25-year retirement for the peace officer titles. So I had a 25-year retirement, but I went way past 25. I'm still here. So the pension improvements, I really understand the importance over the years of pensions and benefits. And for me, it retained me because I knew one day I could collect my pension and I could retire with dignity. And that's all people care about. When they come to work for the city, they want to, or the state doing these civil service jobs, they want to retire with dignity and want to know that they were appreciated. And a lot of corporate people come in and say, we're going to take their pensions away. No, we come in, we make less in salary as the public, as the private sector makes, only because we want it on the back end. We want the pensions on the back end. So you take less salary to live off of going forward, but I mean, on the back end, but going forward, you want the pensions. So that's the trade-off for public service. And a lot of people don't understand when you talk about pensions, pensions are a promise, and we take less money and salary to get the promise of a pension going into the future.
No question. And where would we be, really, city or state, without our civil service workers, our government workers? You know, we'd be nowhere. They make our city and state move forward. And they are the backbone to our workforce. And to make sure that they are protected going forward, again, like I said, to provide for themselves and their families, I think it's critically important. It is critically important. And then how do we, how do we get our apprenticeship programs going to show them that, hey, this is a great path. You're on your way to a great career, great benefits, great pension. I mean, it fuels our apprentice programs. So it really does run the gamut and the whole spectrum of helping people from start of their career to the finish of their career. And that's why pensions and that work is so critically important.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, our very special guest, Senator Joseph Addabbo. You are also the chairman of the Racing, Gaming, Wagering Committee. Yep. Bringing casino and gambling is not just current video lottery terminals. We already have in the metropolitan area specific New York City locations that people want to have casinos in. In general, does a casino gambling generate huge profits, not just for owners, but for the community in which they are located in?
Yes, many times there's an agreement that is made between the local casino and the municipality. Our local municipalities, where the casino site is, and also surrounding municipalities, definitely benefit financially as per contract with the state. And this is millions of dollars that go to these local municipalities for reduction in property taxes or go toward education. On the average, and this is now we're reaching pre-COVID levels. So we've beyond the COVID pandemic. Now we're reaching the levels higher than that. And that's that fact that the gaming industry has given education, just education alone, about $3.5 billion. And therefore, when we increase gaming in our state, it is about a direct benefit to education. But we always have to be mindful, aside from the revenue, aside from the, again, the education funds, the addiction part, which we always make sure is at the forefront of what we do. So whether we do casinos, whether we do horse racing, whether we do gaming, mobile sports betting, the bottom line is we always have to be mindful of the addiction. So funding it, and not only how much money we spend for addiction, but how do we spend it, make sure those programs are credible. So this expansion of gaming in New York, and New York has expanded its gaming over the last 2 years. We've done mobile sports betting, and now we're going to do 3 new downstate gaming licenses. But on the forefront of everything is the addiction issue. I'm pleased that I, again, have the opportunity of being chair, because at the end, it's about jobs. You know, each of those gaming licenses, we have 3 that are going to be decided upon, hopefully, if not later this year, early next year, sometime next year. But each of those 3 gaming licenses brings thousands of construction jobs, and then post-construction, thousands of more. And then, of course, the local deli, the local, you know, businesses benefit as well. But it is about job creation. You know, and again, a post-COVID world, we want to find areas of growth. The gaming industry in New York is going to be an area of growth for jobs, credible union jobs, both construction union jobs and post-construction union jobs. So this is why we want this to move ahead as quickly, as efficiently as possible.
I understand. And out in Aqueduct, you have that casino that's there, and people rave about it. I've never been. Being a Teamster, we go to Vegas a lot. I don't play a nickel slot. It's just not my thing.
I
think. And we represent members at Jake 58 out in Long Island.
Yes.
Also, so I understand the representing people in the gaming industry, and I understand what it means to the community. But if they had to survive off of Greg Floyd, I'm sorry, they'd go broke.
Listen, fortunately, after you, there's a couple other people who may.
Oh no, everybody has their vice in life, but that's just not my vice. I have a motto. I say I'd rather spend it than gamble it away.
Show something for it. I get it. We're facing a situation now where one of our casinos upstate is, you know, about to lay off about 250 workers, union workers, and it's problematic. And we have an opportunity as a state legislature to save those 250 jobs. And with the last remaining 7 days in session, that's what we're hoping to do, save those 250 jobs and actually expand and create more jobs at those facilities that are in trouble. So I'm hopeful that my colleagues and I can, you know, work on this again over the remaining days to save those jobs and see another area of growth upstate.
Are there any negative side effects, such as the need for more policing and increase in compulsive gambling? You mentioned that.
Yeah, there's always that need. You know, certainly with the problematic gaming, we'll always keep that in mind. Public safety is on the minds of most, if not all, of my constituents. And, you know, obviously we did our change in bail for the 4th time in this last budget. Hopefully this is the last time we address the repeat offender. We give judges more discretion and hopefully, you know, given the resources to both the police and the prosecutors and the judges that they need to keep, you know, people who are basically going to do harm off our streets or get those individuals the help that they need. Whether it be mental health programs or any other program that may be helpful. But there's always something in the budget that we miss. And like, for instance, housing, we know we have an issue with housing, affordable housing. Again, when we talk housing, there's an element of jobs too, construction jobs. And the 421A program, which was the incentive to build the affordable housing, was part of that, did not make the budget. And hopefully we can find a way. I'm not too optimistic over the next 7 days, but hopefully we can find a way as a state at some point to address the housing issue, whether it be new construction, helping landlords, helping tenants, you know, again, affordable housing, whatever we need to do to address the housing crisis here in New York.
We had the governor on, Governor Kathy Hochul, on an earlier show, And she had brought up what she was proposing to address public housing, and much of the same, because I know you are a partner of hers because you're in the Senate in New York State. So she had mentioned the affordable housing and trying to thinking about converting some of the office space that is not being used because people have not come back to work and people are working remotely, asking the developers to develop that into housing.
Again, many moving parts. I appreciated the conversion piece. I was in favor of it. Again, on a case-by-case basis, they wanted to actually convert illegal apartments and basements in the five boroughs, make them legal. I had, again, hit the pause button on that because I have had actually situations in my district where fires have caused fatalities because people have no access to exit in an emergency. And so these apartments in Queens become a little tricky. But I understand that this idea about conversion, office space, conversion of illegal apartments comes about because of the crisis of housing and the homeless situation and the asylum seekers. And now we need housing. It's something that I think we're going to need to address rather soon.
Sure. Sooner than later. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, I believe it was an apartment in Queens. We had a horrendous rainstorm and someone drowned, family drowned in the basement apartments. And it was unfortunate. They couldn't get out.
Exactly. That was a rainstorm. We have fires too, but that was a rainstorm. Yeah. We see the water coming and those people were trapped. Like I said, not every apartment can be converted safely.
Right. And it wasn't a warning. It was like a flash flood that just came and got them. So in terms of labor, what is being considered to ensure that there are union jobs and that there are NWBE, which is minority women jobs, and veteran opportunities?
So when we do legislation, and I'm very proud of my legislative team, when we do legislation, draft legislation, you have to actually draw that language, that requirement of an NWBE component, a veterans component. You can actually draw that into the language as a requirement. As we look at, say, for instance, the new construction of Belmont racetrack, as we do that, there's an MWBE component. As we do the casinos, an MWBE component, veterans component, so we basically, again, look, that's just gaming. But we look at these areas of growth and basically see that we can draw into the language these requirements that protect these programs like MWBE and actually have them flourish. We should do that more often. We need to find areas of growth. We have two airports in Queens, JFK and LaGuardia, both have been under major construction. Great opportunities for MWBEs, union jobs, veterans. I mean, that's what you look for. And I think there's a big state. So we need to find these opportunities of growth, areas of growth, and capitalize on it. Make sure we maximize our opportunity there to create these credible jobs.
Very good. And you have 1 minute. Is there anything that you would like to say that we didn't cover?
I would just, and again, thank you very much, Greg, to you and your team, certainly and your members. But I would always encourage your members, union workers, constituents, reach out to your elected officials. Definitely, we're not mind readers. So the idea is reach out to your elected officials on the city, state, and federal level. Let us know what concerns them, how we can make their workplace environment better, how we can improve conditions in their neighborhood, their community, and in their family. Let us know the issues that concern them. This way we can work on them together.
Thank you. And I could say you are a man of action because we reached out to you about civil service status when you were in the council. You got that done and it made a tremendous difference in countless lives because we have families and it just countless lives. I can't even measure it. It's immeasurable. Thank you once again. And thank you for coming on. Senator Joseph Addabbo Jr., thank you for coming on, and we wish you much success. And anytime you have an issue that you want to discuss, you're free to come on. And
thanks, Greg. Thanks for your friendship.
Have an open invitation. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your friendship and your partnership. Thank you. Look forward to working with you.
Okay.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. Very special guest, Senator Joseph Addabbo Jr. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.